there's no need to fear. Underdog is here.
Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
And I'm so sorry, Ken, but we just really don't have any material to talk about this.
Well, actually, this is exciting news.
Because
we just found out just a while ago, because the front runner, Richard Nixon, is leading, and because of his comments on brainwashing, Romney is out of the race.
How about that? 1968 plays itself over again just 40 years later as Mitt Romney, son of George Romney, decides he's no longer a candidate for president of the United States.
I entered this race because I love America. And because I love America, in this time of war, I feel I have to now stand aside for our party and for our country.
That, of course, from the speech that Mitt Romney gave to the Conservative Political Action Conference meeting in Washington, D.C., a speech in which he really lit up the crowd with a lot of great conservative, right-thinking red meat, and the crowd was crazy for him. And then he said, I'm out of here. I'm not running.
You know, on Tuesday, the night of Super Tuesday, when he won seven contests, but none of the big states that he desperately needed to win, he said he's in it for the long haul. He's in it through the convention.
This campaign goes on.
That's right. Didn't happen.
Well, even at the time, it seemed as though that was the kind of thing you say on election night when you know perfectly well, and I think his eyes were saying, and certainly his wife's face was saying, that they knew it was over. It's calculation. It's math. This is what he does well. I mean, he was a turnaround artist. He knows how to find a company that can be saved and how to find a company and reject a prospect that can't be saved.
And you talk about numbers. We're talking about the number of $35 million, at least $35 million out of his own pocket.
As of the end of last year.
Right.
And probably that much again when you total up January, and surely that much again if he ran all the way through February. That would mean $70 million out of his own pocket in an effort that gets him nowhere close to being nominated.
And nothing, if you look at the calendar, nothing in the upcoming states, there's no fertile territory for Mitt Romney anywhere. Obviously, he would have loved to have won Iowa, where everybody for the longest time thought he would win. The fallback state of New Hampshire was going to be his, too, because having been governor of nearby Massachusetts, he won neither of those. He was hoping to win Florida, spent a lot of money in Florida, didn't win that earlier in South Carolina, put an expended effort there. Now, he did win Michigan. He did win Nevada, although it was pretty much uncontested. And, oh, my God, Wyoming!
Yes, he did. He squeaked it out in both Wyoming and the Maine caucuses as well, also in the state of Maine. So,
wait, I remember the Maine.
I think that the big bid that they made on Super Tuesday was to try to get back in the game in California. He changed his travel plans. He went back into the state at the last moment. He spent a lot of money there on media. They were hoping somehow they could pull the rug out from under John McCain in California. And one of the two top issues, in fact, tied for top issue in California among the voters there on the Republican side, was illegal immigration. And that was his ace in the hole.
And all day Tuesday, when one, we knew that illegal immigration was a key issue, and two, right after the polls closed at 11 p.m. Eastern time, everybody was saying it's too close to call, and we were wondering, was this going to be Mitt Romney's big breakout state?
And if he had won California with the ability to win it all, to get all the delegates CD by CD, congressional district by congressional district, he might have won a big enough chunk right there to stay in the race. But as it is, and in fairness to their statements on Tuesday night, they had not really seen all the numbers yet to see just how big John McCain had won on Tuesday. But now it appears he has over 700 delegates on his way to the roughly 1,200 that he needs to be nominated, and he has more than twice as many as Romney, more than three times as many as Mike Huckabee.
Now, we know that there still is substantial conservative unhappiness with John McCain.
To put it mildly.
And the fact that Mitt Romney is now out of the race, do they all rally behind Mike Huckabee?
I find that hard to believe because there's been a lot of dissatisfaction with Mike Huckabee. He has not had the positions on immigration that he has today for very long.
Taxes.
On taxes, he has been open to the idea of using tax increases when necessary to balance the state budget. He has had, in general, the kind of views of many social issues that, while conservative, some other people have characterized them, if you will, as the Christian left. That's not necessarily the profile that those who will not accept John McCain are looking for in an alternative.
Well, if that's the case, then is Mike Huckabee not John McCain's running mate? Wait, why am I asking you all the questions? I'm far more interesting.
I understand, and that's why we usually do it the other way. Okay. But at this particular moment, Mike Huckabee has an interesting decision to make because while he does not have any better mathematical chance of being nominated than Mitt Romney had, considerably less, he has a path to follow, a role to play that was not really open to Mitt Romney. Mitt was only in this thing if he had a real shot at being elected president. Mike Huckabee can be in this thing for any number of other reasons, including possibly vice president. And if he goes on, and we don't know yet how much further he plans to go, but if he were to win, for example, the Washington State caucuses coming up this weekend, if he were to win...
Memory serves, Pat Robertson won that in 88.
Correct. And if he were to win in the state of Virginia, where he would have a strong base of religious conservatives, evangelicals, and some other states that are still yet to vote, he could at least slow McCain's gradual rise to the nomination and, well, maybe even force himself onto the ticket.
You know, it's also interesting because everybody's, if you look at the national polls and the polls that show John McCain beating Hillary Clinton in November, that's also, it's always because of the thought that independents and some disaffected Democrats will vote for John McCain. But John McCain also has this balancing act that he has to go through right now, and that is win over these social conservatives that perhaps Mike Huckabee represents, maybe that Mitt Romney represented. And so John McCain will have to move to the right to win over these votes when, of course, he would love to move to the center and try to get those disaffected Democrats.
So Mike Huckabee up to now has played the role that Fred Thompson also played for John McCain, which is facilitating his march to the nomination. And he helped him get rid of Mitt Romney. Now, though, that Romney is out, Mike Huckabee can remain in and be the last receptacle of all unhappiness for with John McCain and become a great inhibitor to John McCain's positioning himself for November. He could force himself onto the ticket and make it that much more difficult for John McCain to hold on to those very independents or, if you will, centrist Democrats who would otherwise make him so hard to beat in November.
I'd also like to see what kind of role Huckabee plays as far as vis-a-vis McCain, because during the debates, he had nothing bad to say about John McCain. I think the only thing his animus was always saved for Mitt Romney. And I think the reason that is because both Huckabee and McCain felt the ire of Romney anti-McCain, anti-Huckabee campaign commercials in the beginning.
Yeah,
so people, a lot of people think that one of the reasons Huckabee enjoyed staying in was to torment Mitt Romney, who had in turn tormented McCain and Huckabee for so long.
In fact, they were almost a kind of tag team ganging up on Mitt Romney. For example, here's McCain congratulating Huckabee after one of Huckabee's better performances in the primaries.
I want to congratulate Governor Huckabee and his supporters for their success today and tonight. Not for the first time, he surprised the rest of us and proved again his exceptional skills as a campaigner and the extraordinary commitment and determination of the people who believe so passionately in him. I salute you. I salute Governor Huckabee.
And as John McCain saluted Governor Huckabee after all the numbers were in on Super Tuesday night, he was also waving goodbye to Mitt Romney, and I think probably knowing it all along.
One thing about that little wink between McCain and Huckabee, we saw that in West Virginia when Mitt Romney, in the first round of the caucus voting, Mitt Romney had the lead. In the second round, all the McCain people went to Huckabee and gave Huckabee the victory there. So obviously that was almost like a ticket right there, if nothing else, to force Romney out of the race.
One more fascinating thing about John McCain in this race, as we've said many times, his campaign as the front runner a year ago collapsed in disorder, disarray, and underfunding last summer. He was left for dead and came back and said, all right, if I'm not the front runner, I was always more comfortable being the insurgent. I'm going to be the outsider, the underdog. And all fall, he ran a very low budget campaign as an underdog. And on the basis of that, made a comeback.
And although I've never minded the role of the underdog and have relished as much as anyone come from behind wins, tonight I think we must get used to the idea that we are the Republican Party front runner for the nomination.
Now tell me, who's the underdog on the Democratic side? Is it Barack Obama?
It's apparently someone. Well, let's listen to a little bit of this.
2 weeks ago, we were a big underdog. Now we're a slight underdog.
The funniest thing of all is that Hillary Clinton, who has been the establishment candidate from day one in the polls and the money, suddenly she finds herself having to loan her campaign $5 million while Barack Obama raised $32 million, an astounding amount
in the month of January.
January alone.
And another $6 million the day after Super Tuesday.
And now, if, again, I think that what came out of Super Tuesday was a draw. Barack Obama won more states. Hillary Clinton won the big states, probably even in the delegate count. And yet, in the minds of somebody on the Democratic side, their roles have reversed.
Well, he sure had a lot of establishment support yesterday. And I feel very good about the results.
Okay, so Hillary Clinton last year was the Mercedes in the Democratic parking lot, and then the Mercedes ran out of gas, so she had to get out and walk, and now she is the foot soldier. Now she is the poor little beaten down, gee, I can't compete with him and all his big fancy endorsements and all the money he's raising. And in fact, he has become the absolute nonpareil fundraiser of anybody who didn't already have the nomination wrapped up.
One fun note about endorsements. Massachusetts is my favorite. Deval Patrick, Senator Ted Kennedy, Senator John Kerry all endorsed Barack Obama. Hillary Clinton won the state pretty sizably, I think.
Yes, but when you talk about Massachusetts, she had a 30-point lead there.
Yeah, right.
That shrank down to barely double digits. Right. I don't know exactly what she won by on Tuesday. But the state became almost competitive after all those endorsements came in. Apart from those endorsements, Obama had nothing.
Right, and plus the fact I think Ted Kennedy represents far more than Massachusetts when it comes to an endorsement.
I think his main value is probably outside Massachusetts.
Right. But if you look at the calendar in the upcoming days, I mean, we have Louisiana on the weekend. We have actually Louisiana, Nebraska, and Washington caucuses. On Saturday, we have the Maine caucuses. On Sunday, in New Jersey, we have the Sea caucuses, which I've been using that joke 20 years and nobody likes it. And on February 12th, the Potomac primary, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia, those could theoretically all be very fertile Barack Obama country.
Until we get to February 19th and the primary in Wisconsin, which could be something of a rubber contest. It could be like it was in 1960, a state where it's very hard going in to know who's going to come out. And one senator or the other, I'm tempted to say, because in 1960 it was Senator Jack Kennedy against Senator Hubert Humphrey. And Humphrey had a natural advantage being from right across the state line in Minnesota. Some people called him the third senator from Wisconsin. And he was thought to be perhaps more in tune with Wisconsin. But on the other hand, Wisconsin has a lot of Catholics. And so that was a good state for Jack Kennedy to make an advantage out of his religion.
You have a romantic interest in the state of Wisconsin when it comes to presidential history.
Yes, I do. I've always found Wisconsin a fascinating state. It was the state where I had my first newspaper job, and a state that has always played what I would call a creative role in choosing the nominees of the two major parties.
1968, Eugene McCarthy. Lyndon Johnson had just dropped out of the race 2 or 3 days before that. Eugene McCarthy got his first primary win in Wisconsin. If memory serves, President Carter beat Ted Kennedy in 1980 in a key Wisconsin primary.
And in 1976, Jimmy Carter won an even more key primary in Wisconsin over Mo Udall. And that was pretty much the end of the line for Mo Udall. And there was a famous photograph of Jimmy Carter holding up the Milwaukee Sentinel, a newspaper that no longer exists, or merged into another newspaper, a headline that said, Udall beats Carter.
Well, one of the famous Mo Udall stories is that he took his Mo button, turned it upside down to read ow.
Let me ask you the pointed question of the moment, Ken. Can the underdog strategy work for Hillary Clinton?
I mean, who knows what got her the win in New Hampshire? Was it the tearing up? Was it the feel that the boys were ganging up on her? But the point is that I still think that the states like Texas and Ohio on March 4th are going to be crucial for her. But who knows? Look, we don't have to predict the future. The point is this Democratic race really goes on. One could play the underdog role. One could play the front runner role. Obviously, they would both love to play the underdog role. But ultimately, somebody's going to have to win this.
How do you explain Hillary Clinton suddenly having trouble keeping up with Obama in fundraising? Is it just that Obama's been so prodigious, or is it that there is some kind of growing doubt among people who have money to give in the Democratic Party about the viability of Hillary Clinton and her husband, Bill?
Well, part of it is that many Clinton people have already maxed out on the campaign contributions, whereas Barack Obama has a lot of small donors. They're about actually the dwarfs.
Yes,
a lot of dwarfs have given to the...
And, of course, we should remind the listener that the maximum that can be given to any one federal candidate is $2,300. And, of course, Hillary Clinton was widely admired for having attracted quite so many people who could give the maximum amount.
And people have already given to the General Heard general election campaign. They've actually doubled.
That's correct. A general election campaign we don't yet know she will ever make.
Right.
But a lot of people who had already maxed out might still support her, might still be willing to do anything for her, but they can't give her any more money.
The people who argue that Hillary Clinton is going to be the nominee look at New York, New Jersey, California, the big states. I think what Super Tuesday told me is that when voters have a chance to see Barack Obama campaign get more of an opportunity, like Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, things like that, they're more receptive to his message. If it's a 22 states at once event, it gives the Hillary Clinton, the so-called establishment candidate, the advantage. So I think now that we get away from the multi days of states at one time, I think Barack Obama could very well be competitive, certainly in the next month leading up to Texas and Ohio, states that look like very well could be his kind of terrain.
That's correct. I mean, Maryland, first of all, has the largest African-American population of any state in proportionate terms outside the Deep South. Virginia, a state where a relatively small Democratic Party has not had a lot of primaries, but he has the benefit of Tim Kaine, the governor, a Democrat. His campaign apparatus is behind Barack Obama. And then, of course, the District of Columbia, which I think we'd have to assume was perfectly fertile territory for Obama. Then the question becomes Wisconsin. Can he take away a state that only has a relatively small black population? Can he take away a state where he does not have the kind of natural advantages that Hillary Clinton would have from all of her many years of campaigning there? Can he do it just by personal exposure, those big arenas, those big events where he gives the big, impressive speech?
But he's also done very well with white liberals. And you think of Madison, you think of the university there, you think of that kind of constituency could be very well suited for an Obama. But then you go out beyond the liberal confines of Madison, and they're more blue-collar white voters, and they have been less receptive to vote for Obama, we saw on Super Tuesday, even though he's done well with white men. He did well with white men in California. But you wonder where that John Edwards vote, that rural, blue-collar, white male is going to go, and Wisconsin is a good place to find out where it's going to happen.
I'm also going to theorize that Mitt Romney has given Barack Obama a big leg up in Wisconsin. If there's no attractive contest, if there's no real question who's going to win in Wisconsin, if John McCain doesn't need their votes, a lot of independents and lighter identifiers who are not absolutely required in their own minds to vote on the Republican side are going to switch over, vote on the Democratic side, and most of them will vote for Barack Obama. And here's another crucial factor. If he can raise his appeal to Latinos so that he's up from 30% or less of their vote to 40-45% by the time we get to Texas, then I think he has a chance to compete in Texas, to compete in Ohio, stay alive, win the Pennsylvania primary on April 22nd, and have more delegates than she has going to the convention.
The point you make, and I hate to say this, is a very good point, in that if he wins week after week after week, at least in the next several weeks, 3 weeks, there might be this perception that, wait, he may be the nominee after all. And for Hillary Clinton to hope that suddenly March 4th is going to change that momentum is a difficult task.
The counterpose to that is that at some juncture, as Barack Obama begins to look as though he might very well be the nominee, then I think there'll be moments Democrats wake up in the morning and go, you know what, I don't really know that much about this guy. I don't know where he stands on a lot of the issues. I'm not exactly sure what kind of president he would be. And there might be a kind of buyer's remorse in advance of the purchase, a kind of pre-purchase buyer's remorse, and people starting to ask whether or not they really are prepared to hand over the party to a guy they had never heard of 2 years ago or even less.
You know, I just want to let you know that we've received thousands and thousands of emails saying, when are you going to talk about the Republican nominee who was nominated on Tuesday to run against Dick Durbin? And my answer is never.
That's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/elections.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Reardon.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR.